Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right, welcome to the main course. It's Sunday. It's noon. That means you're listening to the main course. Thanks for tuning in. I'm very excited today. We have three guys who run a restaurant group with the team. I have great respect for what they do. Everybody I know is always asking me, could you give me a reservation, four top, six top, tonight, tomorrow? And I'm like, oh, what about this place? And I'm a big fan. Ann's a huge fan. So in studio, we have Mr. Phil Windsor. Thank you for coming.
So wonderful to be here.
And then we have Nick Wilbur, who's the executive chef.
Thanks for having me.
And you spend most of your time at a restaurant called the East Pole, which is on 60th. That way you're between both restaurants. There's Fat Radish and East Pole.
Yep. It's the East Pole is up on 65th between Park and Lexington.
Okay.
It's our newest venture. It's about 5 months old, probably.
Five, almost.
So like a baby, it still needs a good little...
A little caressing, a little burping every now and then.
Absolutely.
Get that timber doodle out. And then we also have Adam Wright Smith, who runs Fat Radish as well, and also runs the operations aspect of the restaurant group. Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
So I wanted to ask my first question, Phil. When we met many, many years ago, we were introduced, and you guys were just starting out. And you guys at that point were mainly caterers, I believe, and you were about to venture into this restaurant. So my first question to you is, what were you telling me back then, and is it the same thing? Are you doing the same thing, or is everything completely different now, all these years later?
Well, when we first met with you at Roberta's, I remember it like it was yesterday. My business partner, Ben Tao, who sadly can't be here today with us. But we came in young, very dumb, very naive, but with a huge dream. And where it took us from that, we hadn't even really started the catering company when we met you then. We were both over from the UK, no money, no visas, and just a kind of a big dream. And I think it started as a sandwich shop after that conversation we had. We started making sandwiches and buying food from the Union Square Market and then making them sandwiches and then delivering them, and it went bust two or three times. It was called Slow Food, the worst idea. Silkstone Slow Food, worst name ever for a delivery company if you're late. But the idea that then, and what we spoke about in that meeting, was about this idea of connecting people with food and opening that conversation, and how can you make difference on a commercial level between what farmers are growing and into a city like New York. And that's still a question we think about kind of answering every single day.
But you came in and you were like, oh, we're thinking of opening a restaurant. I mean, were you guys ready for it? I mean, did you guys get hit in the face by reality? I mean, because you guys really had a very big vision for this. You were going to build the restaurant yourself. You were going to design it yourself. You were going to be there all the time. You weren't the type of owners that weren't going to be there and delegate it. I mean, you're actively involved. I mean, what do you wish you knew then that you know now, or is it just hard work and elbow grease?
I wish there was a formula that you could follow, but I think, you know, what you just said is a lot of hard work, and you know, there's lots of ways you can learn. You learn from experience and you learn from mistakes you make, and as long as you're prepared to get up in the morning and solve the issues, I think that, you know, that's what really helped us. And also a fantastic team. I mean, Adam here with us today, he started off as a waiter in our company, and he now runs our restaurant group, operations day to day. Nick joined us before the Fat Radish opened and has been part of this journey and creating all the menus with us and running, you know, now it's going really well on the Upper East Side. And so I would definitely say a key part of that has been the team that we've had and this like commitment to just going for it.
And how was that, Nick, when you guys first started to collaborate? You would make a dish and Ben and Phil would be like, you know, we don't like this or we love this. You're blowing our mind. And you came into a preconceived notion and then added your own energy and spirit and taste to it. So talk about that collaborative effort, chef to brass.
Well, I think it's like any chef ownership relationship in some ways where, you know, you're always going to have that dish that you bring up and then people, they're either going to like it or not. And they have to like it because, you know, they're the owners. But as far as Ben and Phil are concerned, they have always had this like drive and this certain vision for and a passion for what they're doing.
And what is that vision? I mean, when you came into the team, how did they explain that vision to you? What was it?
Well, it's all about connecting and people with food. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest things in the beginning was being able to spark a conversation at a table about food, generated around food. And mm-hmm. I think that's where like the vegetable first and doing something interesting to spark that conversation and enjoy mm-hmm. that meal and based around that is kind of the through line that we started. And then just knowing where everything comes from and that kind of through line of the relationship that we both had with food at the same time.
Now, what was different about other restaurants? Because there are a lot of other farm-to-table restaurants by the time you guys opened, and yet you guys, it's confirmed, are doing something unique in a special way that's driving people. I mean, is it allude to that thing you just mentioned, a vegetable-focused plate and then the meats and the other things are around it, or is there something?
I think in like the simplest way, I mean, you could kind of point at that, but I think in general, just kind of the overall like feeling of the team and the people that are involved in the Fat Radish, and you just get that sense when you walk into the place, whether it be the food or the ownership or the cocktails behind the bar or the manager running the restaurant, there's always just this good feeling, and I think mm-hmm. that kind of separates us from or why we've become what we have.
I think that, you know, and to Nick's point, at the very beginning, that was the idea. It was not about being chefy. It was not about being restauranty. It was about not having a concept at all. I mean, mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. something that, like with anything, when you're trying to do, say, a new idea that isn't based around a concept, it's quite tricky to explain to people what it was. And mm-hmm. We always laughed about that we couldn't quite pinpoint to a word what we were doing, and we came up with different ideas. But as Nick touched on briefly at the starting point, and I think back to when we were coming up with menus of the Fat Radish, I remember one thing it really kind of clearly and it's a signature dish at the Fat Radish, and it has been for a long time, is the celery root pot pie. And I think that kind of sums up where we were starting. We took this vegetable, we were in season, it was October, there wasn't much around, and the celery root kind of popped up. I loved it. I love mashed celery root. I kind of on different things, and we were like, but we also wanted to put a pot pie on the menu, but we didn't want to go through a traditional heavy chicken mushroom based pot pie. We wanted to do something different, so we gave Nick the challenge and said, here's this not prettiest looking root vegetable but can be incredibly tasty, and we would like to kind of a pot pie. And we kind of left it with him for a couple of days, and what came up the stairs 2 days later from the kitchen in the basement was this like golden puffy, and you ate it, and it tasted so it like chicken, but like it was something you couldn't quite, there was so much substance to it, and that's what we wanted to achieve at the beginning of the Fat Radish, is not trying to be chefy but coming up with clever like ways to use not just vegetables, but using that as a starting point. And we kind of start with that philosophy.
Very cool. And Adam, so running operations, what does that job entail? And what kind of politics do you encounter running? Because it is a kind of, I don't want to say hippie, I don't want to say communal. I don't want to say like Roberta's. None of those things are right, but there is a kind of energy. You feel like you're in a camp, or there is some energy there that other restaurants don't have. So anyway, speak to that and what exactly it means to do what you do.
Yeah. I mean, the Fat Radish has created itself, you know, around what Ben and Phil and Nick have kind of their vision and, you know, with Nick kind of being uptown and then Ben and Phil doing some new projects, I guess the most simplest way to describe is to just, you know, keep that feeling and vibe and keeping the place open and everybody happy. And, you know, we have a great team that have been promoted within. Mm-hmm. Our general managers were all started out, you know, like myself, mm-hmm. at the bottom and worked our way up. And, you know, it is a, it's a great team that we've kind of developed. And I think, the operations is just keeping everybody excited and motivated. And
so what is your day to day? I mean, are you in the kitchen? Are you meeting with people constantly and being like, what's the update? Who's the reservation? I mean, you're kind of a point guard in a way for a lot of the information as it goes around?
Problem solving.
Problem solving.
Like you're like the doctor?
Yeah. He has the unflattering job of the numbers.
So,
I mean, it's there, getting there at 8 o'clock in the morning before anyone else gets there and, you know, doing kind of the back of house business side of it all. And then once the restaurant starts opening up, and then, you know, you've got to kind of keep people motivated and fresh and coming up with new ways to stay relevant. You know, there's so many amazing events and so many amazing projects and people in New York that, mm-hmm. You know, keeping relevant is such a important part of what we do. And it's a way that we kind of keep this train rolling, I guess.
That's why we just discovered social media.
To help that go. Now, and Nick, do you do more? You do less paperwork now, less numbers thing, because you're the chef? I mean, I've often heard
that he's never done any.
You've never done any? Oh, my God. I don't believe that. Something. But, I mean, I always hear you have to do more as more restaurants open, because you guys have... Three. Do you call the bar across from Fat Radish a restaurant as well?
I do, because I think it takes it more serves, work.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the bar across the street is certainly just as important as any.
And it's called the Fat Radish.
It's called the Lead Belly.
Lead Belly.
The
bar
is called the Lead Belly. It's still the great. It actually has the same menu as the Fat Radish, but with more of with an oyster bar. So it's an oyster mm-hmm. bar, and all focused around live music in the evening. So we always have fun, kind of local guys mm-hmm. performing. Like we do a great evening with Chances of Wolves, who do the East Village Radio, who are incredible. Never played the same music twice, and they're who kind of have an evening down there. And so it's a place where if you don't want to go out to necessarily a restaurant, but you don't want to go out to kind of like just a bar, it's mm-hmm. kind of this happy medium. And if you're not like a nightclub person, you can go and enjoy yourself, still like have a dance if you want to.
Well, that's amazing. And I do want to ask you about the building materials at each of the places, but how has your job changed? So, I mean, you start in the basement of a restaurant that's not even open yet, and now it's many years later, and the restaurants are packed, you're sought after, there's three places. I mean, how has your life changed over these years?
I think that my life, as well as everybody else's, has just kind of grown with the Fat Radish as well. Like, it's just such a good community and family that we have between the two places that it allows me to, I think, like, be able to go here, or be here today, and not like have to worry about what's mm-hmm. going on there. Or like, but to touch on your question about do I have to do more paperwork as a chef? I mean, sure. Like. There's more work for everything, and that's fine. And like, I welcome it like as much as these two gentlemen do as well. Like, that's what it's about. Is like, that's why we got into this business, is to keep pushing ourselves and keep driving forward. And yeah.
How many people work for the whole team at all three places, plus the catering team?
Oh, we must be. How many people at the staff bowling party last
Between the three restaurants, there's would be about 90.
Yeah. 90 employees, yeah. Huh?
Yeah, I think, you know, to that point of paperwork and restaurants, we, because we have a we really do focus on the back end as well. I mean, we put just as much time into looking at that than we do on the front. We call it creative discipline. It's like to be able to be really creative, you have to be very disciplined in what you do, and that's where the name Silkstone came from. Is this notion, which is the name of our restaurant group and catering company, is the notion of you can't have one with to produce great food as a farmer. There's the hours of really hard work to create this, and the same with the restaurants, to this kind of sexiness that you see on the restaurant floor, and how staff glide, and the atmosphere of when a restaurant's working well, that kind of like feeling you can, it's impossible to describe, but why people love restaurants so much. What's going on down in the mornings, you have these guys who are coming in at 6-7 in the morning, working all day, and it's not that glamorous, but you can't have one without the other.
Well, everything looks beautiful, mainly the people. I mean, I always feel like the fattest, ugliest guy in the world when I go there, because I don't know how it is. Everyone's beautiful on the Upper East Side, downtown. But I know you guys have put in a lot of energy into how the place looks. And do you use recycled materials? Just speak to that concept, because they're similar, right? I mean, the East Pole, I mean...
There's
a cohesive string between them.
Well, I think the Fat Radish 3 years ago when we were building it was all how I like to build the spaces is take the bones of what's around and then design around that and it's a bit like with the dishes that we do. It's like not trying to abuse too many materials in a space, to try and actually keep it a little bit clean. I mean, the lead belly is a little bit different because we wanted that to have a bit more of this adventure world feel. And then on the Upper East Side, on the main floor, it's even cleaner. Just three materials. Downtown was kind of this use of this white that you see throughout the space on the walls. It was metal, black steel, and concrete, kind of the prominent things that you see in the space. On the Upper East Side, it was American walnut, white, and then black steel. And then the Lead Belly, as a place to kind of transcend you into a different world, it was this idea of this gentleman's kind of like clubhouse, kind of fun space. But we certainly put just as much effort into the aesthetics and the setting, again, to not make it feel too themey, but something that everyone can kind of feel comfortable in.
And then what do you, I want to talk a little bit about your employees and stuff. So you'd mentioned the glide of the waiters and, is that something you tell? I mean, what will someone be told at their first interview? So they come and then like, I want to work here, and you'll say, hey, this is what our ethic is. This is, you're always friendly, or, you know, you're always, is there a certain spirit that you try to instill in your team?
Definitely. There really is. It's the passion for even though for a lot of people who are working as waiters and waitresses, it's not always their first main love, and they do other things on the side. But we always look for somebody who's part of our team who has a real love and understanding of food. And we're at Roberta's, and one of our waitresses, the Lead Belly, is working here today.
Oh, okay.
It's so nice, this crossover, because they do it because they really love the idea behind what we're trying to do. And so that passion and love for it is something that's so important to us. More so than where they've worked necessarily, it's more that this personality and this interest in, you know, some of our staff know much more about, they love cheese and they know more, and I love that. Someone like can go on about all these different cheeses in their interview. It's kind of really exciting to see. And also what we really, we spend a lot of time every day with our staff in all places, education. Is educating on what, whether it would be one particular thing. And to go back a question you asked Nick about what changed over the last kind of three and a bit years for him, I would say from an outsider's point of view was your knowledge. I mean, in terms of detailing, of understanding from who we're working with, where things are coming from. You can talk to Nick about any kind of species of vegetable, like not just about a carrot
or pig
or goat Yes. Or, you know, we've been so lucky working with Heritage and just understanding, and we learn. We take one thing a day, and we teach our staff, and you know, and spend half an hour for service with whoever's there in kind of educating. So education, wanting to learn.
And who writes the menus for you guys? Is that because we were just talking about how funny it is? I mean, do you put the names of the breeds and do the types of the cheese and some of these far out names? And then you also have two very different crowds, downtown and uptown. So how do you navigate that? And when people see these beautiful menus, I mean, how does that happen?
Nick, do you want to answer that?
I mean, we're not the type of place that kind of like. Totes like this is Pathenroth Gardens carrots or whatever, like really throw a lot. We kind of keep the menu description as simple as possible, and then that's where the education of our waiters and wait staff come in, so that they engage the table with like well, this we get this from here, or this is a Heritage red wattle pork chop, or whatever it might be. Like, we don't put that in print. We kind of allow our wait staff and our front of the house to kind of engage the customers that way. And so writing the menus is just, we keep it as simple as possible, and occasionally we have to throw in like certain things that are either important or distinctive, but other than that, like,
you don't bombard people with 30 different adjectives or city and farm name and all that. Yeah, because the fact that you guys selected it speaks, I mean, the Fat Radish brand, Silkstone brand, that's kind of what stands for something above and beyond the farm name.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's also very true as far as, like, we've always been about the Fat Radish. Like, even the people that we hire, like, it always has to be, like, even myself, it's never going to get, it's never going to be about, like, Nicholas Wilbur or Phil Windsor. It's always going to be about Silkstone or the Fat Radish. And I think that people, like, sometimes chefs will get a bigger head and it starts to become about them and their food instead of like the concept or the thing that you started out doing and the drive of a restaurant. And I think that's when restaurants sometimes fall apart a little bit.
For sure, for sure. And now, do you have a separate events team that goes out for the events, or it still comes from that? Because that's a whole different thing. I mean, where you're cooking on premises, I'd like to talk about some of the events. Let's get piggy with it. Talk about this Road to Red Hook, and even if you guys feel like talking about it, the Goatober extravaganza. I think you guys bought more pounds of goat that day than any restaurant in America.
Wait, that makes me very proud.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone cycling through more goat than that. So talk about events and what the goal of, you know, kind of expanding past the borders of your own restaurants.
We were incredibly lucky, as we touched on at the beginning, that we started as a catering company, sandwich company, that moved into a catering company, and still bound by the same philosophy. And that we used this one because it was really great to do, but it was wonderful starting conversations with so many people. And we've been so lucky to travel all over America to do these incredible events and production for different clients, and it was an amazing journey. And we still do these collaborations in terms of with private clients, but what we are really focusing on at the moment is our own led events, really, under the Fat Radish name. We have a wonderful team in our office of people who handle the bookings, and not only stuff that happens in the restaurant, but things that happen outside. Was it last year or the year before? When did we go to Paris?
The year before.
That's
not terrible. Last September.
How fast time goes. When we went to Paris, we did a pop-up Fat Radish, which was purely vegetarian. So these Brits who started a restaurant in New York coming to Paris to do a vegetable own restaurant was kind of an interesting challenge.
Wow.
But it was a great success. We had to search the whole country for organic like kale, and we found it, and we did this, and it all got loads of more questions. That really started this kind of drive of thinking, what can we do? And we're working on at the moment, we're working on doing a pop-up Fat Radish in Brazil for the World Cup.
Wow.
Which will be for a month.
I'll cut onions for that.
Yeah.
I'm from Brazil. That is awesome. So you're doing that to, where you go, São Paulo, Rio?
We're doing it in Rio. Okay. We got approached, but we have such a wonderful Brazilian following. And our partners in the Leadbelly are actually, a lot of them are Brazilian guys, and we've met so many wonderful people, and this sparked this conversation. I have a complete obsession and love for Brazil. I was there when I was 17 for a long time, and so the idea of taking the Fat Radish there, not necessarily to be all about the World Cup football, but just as this challenge to create our kind of food in that market, is going to be very exciting.
Fruit, I mean, that's a different, there's a whole set of different ingredients than England and the New York, for sure.
I had one of the funniest conversations with the catering partners down there who are going to help us about the ingredients when they first looked at our menu, and they're like panicking.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure where I can get these things from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're like, instead of, you know, daffodil greens, it's like banana leaves or goyabada. My favorite dessert is quinding. I think it calls for like 400 eggs in it. It's like the best. But, and they've got great beef. I mean, that's all grass fed, right?
It's amazing. Yeah.
They eat meat 7 days a week there. For sure.
They certainly do. And so we're gonna do something really fun with that. And then the collaborations that we've ended up doing here with Outstanding in the Field, for example, was wonderful. And we went to the rooftop farms in the Navy Yard and did this fantastic dinner and things like that. And then the collaborations with the farms to, you know, we pick an animal. And as we touched on, the first one was Let's Get Piggy With It.
Yeah.
We took a whole pig and thought how many people we could feed out of this one hog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Nick, you should really talk more about this as you
can. How many people can you feed out of a 200-pound hog?
Well, we did a dinner. It was 60 people, five courses of pig with, I think there was like four different canapes from like use in the bits, like a pig ear BLT and a grilled heart, like a pesto thing, which was really delicious. And it was fun. And also the Goat-tober dinner that we did as well. With just the same, like using the 60 people and how many, and just do a whole menu out of goat, with out of a certain amount of goats that we bought.
And you're about to do the Red Hook one, right?
We want to try to do one.
That's even bigger than a cow and a goat.
We're gonna do a cow, and you know, with a cow you get a little more, you get to feed a little more people with a whole cow, so.
Yeah.
So we have a little bigger space.
Yeah, so we have to find a bigger space, and so we're going to partner with an art foundation in Red Hook called Pioneer Works that our friend Dustin Yellen started, and we are going to do a winter whole cow extravaganza. It's going to be pretty fun.
That's awesome. So what does the future hold? I mean, how do you guys ultimately want your legacy to be? I mean, that you brought a bunch of people together at a certain moment in time and created delicious food. I mean, do you guys want events around the world, restaurants around the world? I mean, how do you, what drives you now? What's the next step? Personal
education.
And work?
Yeah, really.
Education for you, Adam?
Definitely. I mean, the Farmer's Dinner series, which is what Phil was just talking about, and he was touched on the waiters being educated, but it's also like the customers being educated, and you know, no one knowing that there's this you know, lack in the market for goat meat, and then so the idea behind, you know, joining up with you guys was to educate our customers. And, you know, a lot of the people sat there and were like, Adam, I've never had goat before in my life. And, you know, this is delicious. And same thing with, you know, all these different bits of the pig that Nick was using that, you know, people would never, ever try on a menu. But the education side of it is not only for us, but also I think for the customers, it's something that I find the most interesting.
Is your customer base the same as other restaurants' customer bases? I mean, just when you say New York City restaurants, I'm going to Gramercy Tavern. I've always sensed that you've had like an in-house kind of cultish group of rabid followers, you know, people who really believe in you guys. You know, I don't know. I always sense that you have your crew. You're like a movement as well as just a restaurant in a good way, you know. There's something that comes from an energy you feel when you go to your places.
Oh, well,
like that, you say, the staff and everything.
That's very kind of you to say. I mean, I don't I think what we've always had and we feel so lucky about is such a diverse group of people who come to the restaurants from all different walks of life, of all different age groups, but all again seem to enjoy, we hope they enjoy the experience because of all the things we've spoken about mm-hmm. tonight. And as a result, we have very lucky that we have some amazing repeat customers mm-hmm. and supporters who trust us. And I think it is, if you're going to invite people to a dinner and you're going to feed them, you know, pig ear BLTs and kind of heart and pesto canapes, as Nick talks about, and all these different bits and pieces, as well as something on a simple note, just saying, you know, try this carrot, just carrot dish with carrot and tajiki or whatever it is, then there needs to be a little bit of trust, and that they trust what we're kind of doing. And that's something I find from our consumers or people who are customers, they really kind of get behind and support what we do. And that's what we're finding on the Upper East Side. It's like anything, everyone's kind of trying the new restaurant, the new spot, mm-hmm. and we never try and be for everyone.
Right.
We don't change for people, and that takes a bit of time for people to understand, but we always just try and stick to what we believe in, and we're very lucky that our customers support us through that, if that makes sense.
And is there a spice or a herb, that you use a little bit more than others? Is there a signature flavor or essence? Not all the time, of course, across all the dishes, but is there a go-to thing that adds a certain fat radish personality to it?
We'll say, this is cheesy, but love.
Love.
Edit that out.
Care has
a flavor.
Is that
lovage? Is that a vegetable?
Somebody once told me that care has a flavor. Right?
Carrot so, does?
Care.
Oh, care, yes.
So if you deal with farmers who care about what they're doing, you deal with ranchers or mm-hmm. people who are purveyors of these meats and like heritage or, you know, the small farmers that I shake a hand with every day, they care about what they're doing. And then in turn, you take that on. You have this product that you want to care about because you met the guy or you mm-hmm. know the person, and that translates into the dish, and that translates to your cooks, that translates to the front of the house. And that all kind of is one through line of just
light touch, letting the essence of the food come out. Yeah. It's very Chez Panisse. I know Alice loves your both restaurants. She's a huge fan, and that supports her whole philosophy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the light touch is there, but it's also you just want to represent this the best way you can because you know the person who gave their life, or not their life, but you know their blood, sweat, and tears are in their farm or... Mm-hmm. in what they believe in. They chose to raise a heritage breed pig because they care about that and they want to continue the life of the species or whatever that other thing is that's behind it all. Is kind of, if you understand that and then you can convey that to the people that are cooking it, mm-hmm. like my cooks or my wait staff, that, you know, they understand that same philosophy, then they kind of, they just get behind it. People mm-hmm. get behind it. And I think that, that's the through line of, I don't have a specific spice.
There's a spice that you go to. Well, it's interesting. I mean, really, the biggest thing of the Fat Radish and East Pole and Leadbelly, is that you feel very special when you go there, and yet it's not much of a to-do at all. Nothing is very overly complicated. It's almost like a French, bistro, simple, and yet... You feel good when you're there. The people there, people are up. The food is delicious. It looks good. The people are good. I mean, it's just a special place to go, and it could also be an everyday place to go. That's a very hard line to be on. It's not crazy expensive. I mean, it is everyone. You could always say Fat Radish. People would be like, yes, 100%. Yeah. You're always in the mood. So, it's not a big crazy thing that you have to go through or deal and what's on the menu and how does this work? And we remain huge fans. And how do people reserve? Is there a website that you guys update? I mean, you guys big into social media now?
Yeah, huge. we just started our Instagram.
If there's a delay between when I ask a question and when they answer, it's because they're on social media.
We're really trying our site to get with the time.
Is it silkstone.com?
SilkstoneNYC.com.
SilkstoneNYC.com.
And then you can book, you can book through the Fat Radish NYC or the Leadbelly NYC.
And to get catering events, do you go anywhere? I mean, you go in Paris, you go to Brazil, you go to... someone's roof. I mean, you would anything's possible, right?
Anything's possible.
Your team can do pull it off.
We really, exactly. As I said, if like with our customers, if our philosophies align, they love what we do, then we will do anything. For
anything.
People.
So give us a heads up. A lot of people are going to be going to the World Cup. What are they going to see at the Fat Radish event? How does Fat Radish do Rio?
This is what I'm working out at the moment. We're talking about that now. The most important thing is that we will take the ingredients that are around there in the markets and then put our spin on it. And that's going to be it.
I'm from Brazil. I can say this. Don't wear those nice watches to the market because they will take them from you. That's still true about my home country. Oh. But thanks so much, guys. I mean, I have great respect for what you guys do and how many small purveyors you guys support, from my wife Anne to me to hundreds of other farms around the area. And like I say, you make it look very seamless, effortless. So,
well, thank you so much. Firstly, for all the incredibly and some of them not true compliments you just said.
Some not true.
But also to supporting us is. As you said at the beginning, you were the first person we met when we came to New York and talked about this.
Aaron Fitzpatrick, right?
Yes, Aaron Fitzpatrick.
Oh, man, long time ago.
Long time ago. And, you know, when we came in, you took the time, and as a result, you allowed, you inspired us to go on this journey. I'll never forget what you said. I'm sure it will be in one of the essays.
It was, I think I remember, it was about you got to make compromises. You can't be 100% of the time, or else you're living some utopic hippie vision. And in my book, one of the things I talk about, everyone's always like, oh, should we be eating meat? What are the environmental consequences of eating meat? I'm like, dude, we America's consumed 10 billion livestock this year. Let's get with the program, one step at a time. And I learned that, of all people, from Alice Waters. Yeah. She's like, listen, you make some statements, some move in the right direction, and you're on the ship. If you make no moves in the right direction, you're not on the ship. So,
It was amazing. And
it takes time to be perfect. Exactly. It's always something you strive for.
And that's why we'll never stop kind of doing what we're doing, but we're never thinking we want to dominate. It's just we're just trying to get better with what we're doing every day. And so thank you for having us here and supporting us, because it means the world.
Well, you guys buy from us a lot. So well, we are here with Phil Windsor, who owns a Silkstone Group, with Ben Towell, who is not able to be here. We're with Nick Wilbur and Adam Wright Smith. So thanks, guys, for being on. And let's walk over to the office and see if we can get you on the news section of the website for some stories. But thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to everyone in the studio. And remember, we're a nonprofit 501c3 organization, so your $120 supports programming like this, like our news. It also gets you a beautiful HRN tote bag. So thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the Arts and Caesars show.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.